Chapter 9. Ullinor, Ground Zero. Maximus Thane stood amongst the rubble of 44 Thusa. Charges placed about the asteroid superstructure by the Adeptus Mechanicus at Ibithica Prime had allowed the Imperial Fists to choose their exit points. Firing the detonators above the small lake of molten rock in which the wreckage of the asteroid sat, the chapter prepared to step out onto the doomed surface of Ullinor. Thane waited as Thunderhawks deposited land raiders, land speeders, and bikes down onto the strips of steaming black rock. The devastated land about the mountainous remains of the asteroid was clouded with black dust and glowing molten rock that bubbled in strips and shallows. From what he could see, it was a landscape of twisted, smouldering devastation. Scorched sand and wildfires, wreckage, rubble, broken bodies. The second company, under the famed former Crimson Fist Conrad Carlito, marched their Centurion assault squads out onto the wasteland, each step of the mighty warsuits crushing grit and shattering the heat-baked stone. Formations of Storm Talon gunships roared into position above their allocated companies. As Imperial Fists, in their soot-besmirched plate, moved into formation, Emmerich Berengard came up behind the chaptermaster. The Terminators of the First Company were deploying, their storm shields and thunder hammers held in close. The grizzled Berengard carried a monstrous power sword, which stood almost as tall as the Terminator Space Marine himself. Lady Brissanus skidded down smouldering scree with a squad of her Sisters of Silence. Between them, they dragged one of the Orc Psykers in chains. The thing roared and clawed at them, but the Sisters hauled at it, wrangling the creature back into position. "It is the lowest form of life," said Berengard with disgust. "It will be even lower when we have done with it," Tycor assured him, holding the company standard above the warriors of Thane's honor guard. Thane let them have their words. Their genetically bred bravado, it was almost a ritual. Before battle, while guardsmen cursed and prayed, and the servants of the Omnissiah climbed inside their great war machines, the warriors of the Adeptus Astartes talked about what was and what would be, the destruction they would bring to their Xenos enemies, and the honour of being the Emperor's angels. The shattered rock trembled under the chaptermaster's boots. From out of the charge-blasted exit stomped a dreadnought, painted in midnight black. It trailed frayed honours and was draped with chains that jangled with its every thumping step. Strips of vellum hung like a tabard between its heavily armoured legs, while a roaring brazier burned on each shoulder. A cracked and browning skull sat in a hooded socket, each eye aglow, and the gilded wings of the Imperial Aquila spread across its battle plate.
"The High Chaplain has awoken,"
Captain Berengard announced. The monstrous machine thundered past the chaptermaster before coming to a stop, its automotive engines rumbling. A living shrine, Chaplain Baccarath, had been entombed in its sarcophagal battlesuit for longer than Thane had been alive. While the chapter had its full complement of company chaplains, all drawn from the different successor chapters, the venerable Baccarath had been given the title of High Chaplain in honour of both his many years of service and the number of foes that had fallen before his hulking form. When he spoke, a voice that issued from voxcasters and boomed with age, experience, and madness, the sound carried across the smoke-wreathed desolation.
"Where?"
The Chaplain Dreadnought's brutal chain fist growled to life while his twin-linked assault cannons cycled. High Chaplain Baccarath did not know where he was or the year into which he had been awoken. He did not know the nature of the enemy beyond. He did not even seem to care that he was standing among the ranks of the Imperial Fists rather than his own chapter. All he knew was that he had been called to serve, to kill in his Emperor's name.
"Everywhere, High Chaplain," Thane told him.
The chaptermaster scanned the swirling black obscurity of the crash site. He peered through the choking dust that glowed in infernal red with the light from the molten surface below. The auto-senses of his Terminator helmet cycled through different spectra before settling on a false-colour filter representing target signatures. Thane took a moment to absorb what he saw. The horizon was not just blotched with enemies, it positively blazed with approaching targets. hordes upon hordes of hulking monsters charging for 44 Thusa, the mountain that had appeared upon their savage world and levelled forts, workshops, and hundreds of thousands of warrior greenskins. Clan Kin, whom the barbarian orcs of the neighbouring fortress precincts had seen disappear in a thunderous tsunami of dust, flame, and unstoppable force. His vision picked out the serrated outlines of rabid green mobs that stretched as far as his armour's spirit could see. Horned helms, spiked armour, monstrous augmentations, ragged banners, and barbed chainswords held high. Thane could see rolling gun fortresses belching heat and smoke, with war bikes chewing up the rocky ground and surging ahead. Hunchback walkers, dragging hydraulic claws and shoulder-mounted artillery, were lost in the shadow of an orc gargant, a towering horror of layered metal and enormous weaponry. Even at such a distance, the thing shook the ground with its hydraulic step. Coming up behind the weaponized effigy, scrambled from some nearby base, Thane could see the enemy aircraft thundering in, pot-bellied bombers and junk fighters that were little more than jet engines with wings. The chapter master's hearts beat hard at the sight. The Imperial Fists had levelled a small corner of the beast's empire, a vast walled precinct of his continental palace. The monster would not stand for that. He would do what the Imperials had done when the orc fleets and attack moons had left worlds burning in their wake. He would send his best. And like the Imperial Fists, like the Space Marines of the Death Watch and mighty Vulcan himself, its best would die. Spilling from surrounding strongholds and the fortress palace of Gorkogrod itself, the Green Hordes aimed to close the gap, to flood the devastated landing zone with firepower, muscle, and savagery. Gun fortresses and scrap tanks would ride roughshod over the interlopers. Bombers would obliterate the crash site. The gargant, both an effigy to savage gods and a palace sentinel, had been dispatched to crush them. Thane didn't have the time or manpower to stop such apocalyptic weapons of destruction. He could not allow dropships, conveyors, and their precious cargo of fighting souls to be swallowed up by the green maelstrom. The chapter master had established a toehold right in the middle of the beast's barbarian empire. He would not lose it to a counterinsurgency, not even an attack of such overwhelming strength that it swept in towards them like a natural force. All about him, Thane knew that the Imperial Fists were seeing what he was seeing.
"And here you wait!" High Chaplain Bakarath's voice crackled from his voxcasters, the scorn in his tone like a cutting edge. "Did you used to favour the sparring cages, High Chaplain?" Thane asked.
"I did,"
the Chaplain Dreadnought told him, unsure as to whether the new Chapter Master was levelling some kind of insult at him.
"And if I were to favour them now, I would be able to tear the cage, bars, opponent and all, out of the auditorium."
"I don't doubt it, Venerable Chaplain," the Chapter Master said. "Brothers of my ilk favoured Fist over Blade."
"The pugilist's path," Bakarath said. "I too have broken my honoured brothers' heads in my day."
"Then you know," Thane said, "that the knockout blow is often struck out of opportunity. Opportunity created by an intentional opening, an invitation that cannot be resisted. You put your opponent where you want him, in the devastating path of your fist."
"That is as may be,"
the High Chaplain said, his vox-hailed words echoing about the shattered remains of 44 Thusa.
"But my auto-senses tell me that we are standing upon a multitude of paths, and on all of them we are the ones about to be devastated."
"Just be ready to do the Emperor's work," Thane told the Chaplain. "Brother Zolt, how far out are the dropships?"
2 minutes, Chapter Master,"
the epistolary told him across the vox channel. "And at present speed, how long until the enemy vanguard reach our position?"
"The same."
Thane stood and waited. The dust and smoke began to thin. The strips of molten rock bubbled and spat, and the roar of the enemy grew louder about them. The titanic steps of the gargant, the coughing and rumbling of monstrous engines, savage battle cries, soon the silhouettes of the orc hordes could be made out in the haze. Hulking chieftains towered over their followers, bellowing their alien rage and shooting into the sky with belt-fed weaponry. Bikes screamed ahead, Gun fortresses fired their mighty cannons blind. The sky was filled with a drone of closing aircraft. The cave entrance that the Imperial fists had blasted in their asteroid transport was cast into the shadow of the Great Gargant. Shells from both the Titanic Walker and the Orc armor smashed into the side of 44 Thusa. Grit and shattered rock rained from the impacts down onto the Imperial fists, drumming off their plate.
Chapter Master, I must insist,
High Chaplain Bakarath said, his words bouncing around the mountainous exterior of the asteroid.
Hold position,
Thane ordered across the vox. Gunship-deposited land raiders idled. The powerful engines of Space Marine bikes chugged. Storm Talon gunships swooped in, the launchers of their missiles aimed over the ranks of Imperial fists. Company by company, they held position about the broad cave entrance, their bolt guns, pistols, and heavy weapons aimed at the oncoming storm of green flesh and carnage.
My lord, that gargant,
Tycor said, but Thane ignored the standard-bearer. He could hear the flap of the chapter battle standard in the backwash of the gunship engines.
Drop ships and conveyors on final approach,
Epistolary Zolt reported. Above, beyond the drone of approaching bombers and the roar of his own gunships, the chapter master could hear the descent engines of the gigantic dropships, each carrying Astra Militarum regiments and the macroclades of Skitarii soldiers. Beyond them, he could make out the even deeper rumble of mass conveyors bringing down the god machines of the Adeptus Titanicus.
We must attack!
High Chaplain Bakarath insisted, with a growl of his automotive engines.
Hold!
Thane said. He licked his lips. The enemy were everywhere. He could hear the roars of monsters astride war bikes and the crash of gunfire coming into range. The ground before the Imperial fists' ranks erupted in sparks, showering stone and the splatter of molten rock.
My lord,
Emmerich Berengard said. Even the Grizzled Templar stirred to question his chapter master's orders and sanity. Thane nodded. He had drawn the enemy in. It was time to deliver the killing strike.
Lady Brassanus, Thane said, our foe is in range and in great number. Now is the time, sister. Do what our bolts and blades cannot.
Thane looked back grimly at Tycor and Berengard, while the High Chaplain's autoloaders primed with a sequence of clunks that seemed to underscore his doubts. Brassanus led her Sisters of Silence out from under the shadow of the asteroid. Picking their path carefully through the channels of molten rock, they heaved along the monstrous Orc Psyker until they were clear of the Imperial fists. At Brassanus's sign, the sisters backed from the creature in a crescent. Letting the chains run to their full length, they secured the creature to a mangled girder. The monster became the nexus of a blaze of ethereal power. Bolts of psychic rage snapped between it and the rocky floor, searing with growing intensity. As the silent sisters moved away, back to the safety of the waiting Imperial fists, the Psyker became a dazzling nova of otherworldly energy, spidery arcs sizzling about it. It tried to lunge free of its restraints, to no avail. Thane looked back and forth between the blinding light of the Orc Psyker and the rabid advance of the alien hordes. His plate's systems registered the first slugs of the Orc vanguard plucking at his Terminator armor. Dathan Tycor held the chapter standard high and took his position with the honor guard around his chapter master. The barrels of High Chaplain Bakarath's assault cannons whirred to life in readiness for the storm to come. Chain swords growled in unison amongst the battle brothers of the 8th Company. Across the chapter, missiles primed in their launchers, multi-melters and plasma guns hissed to readiness. Heavy bolters and bolt guns cleared with a thunk. First rounds were loaded into breeches. Barrels were aimed. Ceramite fingertips rested on triggers.
Now, damn it,
Thane growled. The words were almost a plea. Suddenly, the intensifying light storm about the Psyker died. Thane felt his stomach flip with a backwash of otherworldly emptiness. With tens of thousands of orcs converging on the impact site, their mere presence feeding the Psykers with ethereal power, the Orc prisoner had become a weapon of mass destruction. Without the intensity of the nullifying field about it, the colossal psychic energies building within the creature blasted the monster's head from its shoulders in a fountain of gore. And then followed the ugly heads of the closing attackers. The crazed warrior orcs on the front line died in droves even as they charged at the Imperial fists with reckless bloodlust, their boots hammering on several steps more as their bodies crumbled and their heads disappeared in blasts of blood and brain. As orc carcasses crashed down into the dirt, green ethereal energies crackled from the stumps of the necks and briefly across their bodies, before dying away. The effect of the Silent Sisters' retreat became clearer as the forward ranks of orcs stopped shooting. They dropped their weapons and clutched their heads and tusks. A bestial shriek arose from each before their heads started exploding, shooting gore into the skies of Ulanor. As a red mist descended upon the greenskin hordes, the forward ranks collapsed. The cacophony of gunfire began to die away. The headless corpses of orc riders fell from careering warbikes. The cannons of battle fortresses fell silent before the tanks drifted into their own allies. Ploughing through mobs of armoured greenskins, the vehicles mulched orcs in their tracks and smashed into each other, resulting in spectacular explosions and a storm of shrapnel. The surviving orcs and their hulking chieftains were at first unperturbed by their falling comrades. It was normal for orc vanguard troops to fall before enemy gunfire. The following warriors barged past crashing corpses to get to the front line, where their savage gunfire or barbed bladework might find an enemy. Instead, they found a furious bolt storm of nearly 1,000 Imperial fists unleashing their blessed weaponry. Missile launchers streaked destruction into the oncoming hordes, while the assault cannons of Stormtalon gunships chewed through the thinning enemy ranks. Before long, the orc army had stopped in its tracks. The air was heavy with gore, and the ground carpeted with alien corpses. Battle wagons slid down into bubbling hollows of molten rock, melting in the magma, their headless crews still slumped inside. Above the Imperial fists, the great gargant had frozen. Its colossal workings moaned, the mournful drone of metal upon metal and frozen hydraulics echoing about 44 Thusa. The mighty vehicle tottered. Gravity and the weight of its monstrous weaponry was dragging it over. Without living crew to correct the war machine's fall, the towering effigy of alien ingenuity went over on its side. The titanic walker shattered as it hit the ground, pulverizing greenskin bodies and filling the sky with an excruciating boom whose echoes seemed to hang in the air. With the gargant toppled and the field of battle a bloody haze of orc bodies, Thane heard the dropships and conveyors of the fleet descend. The landing zone was easy to find, painted red in the gore of warrior foes for kilometers about the crashed asteroid. Silent slaughter greeted the landing gears of the mighty dropships. Wreathed in steam and venting gases, the colossal Astra Militarum and Skitari transports sat upon the bloody ground as following craft, including the huge orbital conveyors of the Adeptus Titanicus, made their final approach. Moments later, Navy strike fighters screamed across the sky, banking and circling the carnage surrounding 44 Thusa. The Imperial fists stood there amongst the death and destruction, their guns heavy with bolts unfired and their plate pristine. As the noble yellow of their armour and idling vehicles misted red with the drifting blood of the battlefield, the remaining Sisters of Silence left the asteroid with the two surviving orc psykers chained between them. Stepping forward through the ranks of his honour guard and from beneath the standard, Chapter Master Thane stood next to High Chaplain Bakarath. Beyond, through the thinning dust and the blood-stained skies, he could see the distant fortress palace of the Beast. The vast, jagged monstrosity of stone and metal plating appeared to have suffered some superficial structural damage as a result of the asteroid's impact. Gorkagrod still stood, however, its colossal architecture, reinforced walls and fat citadels still towering above the clan lands and desolation of Ulanor. Thane smacked a clenched black power fist against the Chaplain Dreadnought's thick plate. "Now we attack," Thane told him. The chapter master began to issue orders to his captains and companies across the Vox. "Bikes and land speeders to reconnoitre ahead of the main force. Land raider columns to take position along our flanks. We move as a chapter. We move as one. Companies, form up. Captain Carlito, your second company centurions are to take vanguard and set the pace." "Captain Brondal," Thane said,
The rearguard belongs to the 6th. You are to have the chapter's back.
As ever we shall,
Chapter Master, Mace Brondell returned. Lady Brisanas, look to your prisoners, Thane said. They travel under the chapter's protection until their talents are ready to be deployed.
A plan, Chapter Master,
First Captain Berengard said, hefting his mighty blade.
Is simple, Thane said. We are the bolt discharged from the gun, direct and unstoppable. We punch through the alien host, puncturing plate, rupturing flesh, and breaking bone.
He looked up at the shapes of black thunderhawks dropping down out of the sky.
The Death Watch will eradicate any orcs that try to close the gap behind us. The guardsmen and Adeptus Mechanicus will clear anything that remains. Like the bolt, the Adeptus Astartes will fly straight and true. Our target is the great beast of Ulanor, and let no wall, weapon, or creature stand in our path. For we are the Imperial Fists, the living weapons of the Emperor.
It was a glorious sight to behold, near 1,000 sons of Rogal Dorn marching to war. With Carlito Centurion setting the steady pace, company upon company held stalwart formation behind. Land raiders rumbled beside the Imperial Fists, mulching through the bodies of headless orcs and barging derelict battle wagons aside. Captain Gortez rose ahead with the land speeders and heavy-set bikes of the 5th Company, while Brondel's tactical squads covered the chapter's rear. All the while, the gun-laden towers and jagged walls of Gorkagrod rose before the Imperial Fists. As Thane trudged through the sea of bodies and the burning rubble left behind by the city-leveling power of the asteroid impact, Epistolary Zolt kept him apprised of the status of the various forces attacking Ulanor. The titans of the Legio Decimata were raining destruction down upon the precincts near 44 Thusa's impact site, levelling cannon-bristling fortresses, monstrous factories, and the shanty workshops that belched smoke in between. Princeps Signoris Grimaldi had managed to field his titans from mass conveyors and bulk landers that were swiftly overrun by greenskin hordes. At the price of an entire legion of Skitari soldiers and combat servitorship sentinels, the god machines Deus Domitor, Divinitatur Excelsi, and Imperator Ultimatum were allowed their freedom. Although denied the ritual observances that usually heralded the awakening of their machine spirits, the annihilation on offer in the palace precincts was enough to satisfy them. When the Deus Domitor, damaged by enemy bombing runs and the wild strikes of orc artillery pieces, Grimaldi awaited dropships carrying what remained of the 201st Zenobian Regiment of foot, in the hope that the guardsmen and those that followed could establish a foothold in the apocalyptic wasteland left behind by his titans and retake the landers. Lord Marshal Rothenberg, meanwhile, had managed to unload his armour in the devastation following one of the cataclysmic asteroid strikes, but the terrain in which he had put down was difficult. Lehman Russ variants, heavy battle tanks and bane blades from patchwork contingents of the Delphric Cataphracts, the first Gorgonian ironclads, the Nimnal Adimataclax, and Brontagast 4th Armoured had all deployed together to punch through the orc hordes and their inferior battle fortresses. Progress was slow, however, as the tanks became bogged down in the extensive delta system of a heavily polluted river that had run through the devastated precinct. The river was choked with fungus and orc bodies from the asteroid impact, and the going was made worse by the toxic sludge from a vast factory complex further upstream. The delta turned to blood, mud, and mulch beneath the tracks of Rothenberg's armour, forcing the Lord Marshal to deploy the remnants of the 39th Lundran Indentured, the only infantry regiment currently at his disposal, in helping to dig out sinking Lehman Russ battle tanks. Then came the second wave, orcs whose gun fortresses and battle wagons turned out to be no better adapted to the environment than Rothenberg's own division. With both orc and imperial armour intermittently stuck in the heavy metal mire, mud-thrashing tanks became small islands from which guardsmen and greenskins exchanged vicious fire. Like a honey trap, the thunder of Imperial cannons drew creatures on foot and within the patchwork plating of battle wagons for kilometres around, turning the engagement into an ever bigger mess. Magos Reductor Omnix was having better fortune in a range of volcanic mountains just to the north.
The nest of peaks reached up from the lands beyond the beast's palace. They had been fortified to form a surface-to-orbit macro-cannon emplacement and a line of surrounding strongholds, whose artillery sat in installations carved in the mountainsides. As well as being military fortresses, the strongholds stained the sky with black smoke, belched from workshops and weapons factories, the orcs' colossal forges utilizing the magma chambers of the surrounding volcanoes. Magos Omnix's initial assessment had told him that the embedded fortresses would require days to take, even with a small contingent of self-propelled artillery, bombards, and siege mortars under his command. Fortunately for the tech priest, the impact of one of the asteroids had initiated a chain reaction of volcanic eruptions that flooded the interior chambers of the mountains with lava. With hundreds of thousands of orcs already fleeing the stronghold, the Magos Reductor used his monstrous artillery on the mountainsides. Thousands of tons of dislodged rock and debris crashed down the slope, breaking and burying the escaping orcs. Deploying Skitari Rangers aboard Mechanicus Valkyries, Omnix had his cybernetic soldiers pick off the hundreds of hardy greenskin survivors that had escaped the disaster. As Grimaldi, Omnix, and Rothenberg attempted to get footholds in the area about the asteroid impact sites, they were followed down by the meager stream of reinforcement ships sent by Dominus Zokuv and Admiral Napier. Colossal dropships carrying Astra Militarum regiments, Skitari macroclades, and remnant armor formations belonging to both negotiated the storm of atmospheric gun platforms, orc attack ships, grapplers, and fat cruise missiles launched from ground silos on the planet's surface. Legio Cybernetica arc freighters transporting maniples of battle automata and mass conveyors ran the gauntlet of crash capsules and ramming craft as they attempted to get their precious few ancient and honored god machines down to the landing site intact. Even faith ships, carrying the ravening militia armies of the Ecclesiarchy, attempted to run the orc blockade alongside the sleek temple craft of the Officio Assassinorum that were used to a more clandestine insertion. As Zolt's blizzard of reports came in, it became clear to Thane just how far the odds were stacked against them on Ulanor. Dropships carrying surviving regiments of guardsmen were being blasted out of the sky by rocket silos. Hastily refitted Imperial battlecruisers were tumbling from orbit aflame. The attack groups had managed to carve out landing sites in the swarming multitudes of the beast's continental hordes, but an entire planet was coming down on them. While the remaining carriers and arc freighters continued to send dropships and landers with small regiments and Skitari half-legions, they could not match the reinforcements summoned by the beast on his own world. Tribes of nomadic orc warriors mounted on bikes and war tracks, cavalcades of tanks and battle fortresses under the command of the beast's most monstrous chieftains, millions upon millions of orc warriors summoned from every fetid corner of Ulanor, drawn to the battle and their beast by the apocalyptic arrival of humanity on their soil. As the sun lowered on the horizon, a hazy orb that smeared the sky with blood and dust, the central stronghold of the beast's palace could be made out. It was a towering, ugly silhouette of jagged irregularity, serrated battlements, armored towers, the barrels of vast superguns and alien architectural bombast. Its construction was both martial and monstrous, boasting exotic surface-to-orbit weaponry, massive gargant assembly workshops, and tribal sub-citadels. As the sunlight disappeared, the flashes of the space battle above became clear. The darkening firmament became a rune bank, blinking with alerts and warning lamps. However bad it was on the surface, it would be worse in the void. The system was choked with attack ships, crash capsules, and hulks. Orc boarders filled derelict craft to the rivets and orbited Ulanor, waiting for the call to war. While the Imperial fists were the sword thrusting for the beast's alien heart, the Navy battle cruisers and Mechanicus arc ships with a shield, with a mighty phalanx weathering the worst of the punishment. As Navy lightnings shrieked overhead and battle-scarred Marauder aircraft tore through the sky in dogfights with enemy flyers, flaming orc attack ships tumbled out of the benighted heavens. Blasted to wrecks in the disciplined broadsides of grand cruisers and smashed aside by the fortress monastery, vessels plummeted, broken-backed and glowing with the heat of re-entry. They struck the blasted lands of Ulinor, creating fountains of rock and wreckage that rocketed skyward. A colossal derelict plunged spectacularly down through the heavens, breaking in half after some kind of brutal ramming action. Zolt informed his chapter master with heavy heart that the wreck was the venerable Mars-class battlecruiser, Tyrant's Light. Hitting the surface of Ulinor, the flaming remains of the majestic vessel rolled across the path of the chapter, forcing Captain Gortez to recall bikes and land speeders that had streaked ahead of the advancing column of Imperial fists. The battle brothers of the Second Company trudged on in their Centurion suits, followed by veterans in tactical dreadnought armor. The companies of the Imperial fists marched to war, flanked by rumbling land raiders. Before them, the palace fortress grew, a jagged monstrosity of a fortification, all towers, ugly stone, and thick armor plating. The stronghold was an architectural abomination, smothered in overlapping energy shielding and protective fields. In some places, the monstrous fortification was unshielded and open to the sky. In others, it benefited from triple shielding, able to resist the most determined of attacks. While the broken corpses and shattered structures smoldering beneath their boots were testament to the destructive power of the asteroid's impact, the beast's fortress seemed to have weathered the worst of the devastation.
"Captain Gortez, Chapter Master," the Vox chirped.
"Proceed, Captain.
Third wave enemy forces," the former Crimson Fist reported, "leaving the palace."
"Form up," Thane ordered, waving the tank column on.
It did not take Thane long to see the reinforcements. A coordinated attack. It made sense. The beast would rather his forces face the Imperial Fists outside of Gorkhagrod's walls than within them, and indeed, he had designed his palace this way so that the progress of any invaders might be frustrated by enormous barriers cutting the Continental Palace into numerous kill zones. War bikes and gun-mounting buggies leapt the fortress's jagged walls in a constant stream of outriders, no doubt intended to flank the approaching Imperial Fists. Orc aircraft borne on sets of serrated rotor blades took to the air from the palace compounds, the chug of their engines and beat of their blades echoing across the desolation. Each carried beneath it a huge piece of ordnance, almost too heavy for the craft to get off the ground. Meanwhile, on the smoking wasteland about them, hatches set within rocky bunkers began to open, pushing aside smouldering wreckage and baked earth. Hulking orcs, dressed in heavy armor and bearing brute cybernetics and monstrous weaponry, began to pour from the hatches.
"Artillery!"
Captain Berengard called out to his First Company veterans as big guns and mortars within the fortress walls began hurling explosive shells into the air. Thane frowned. The orcs knew where the Imperial Fists were heading. As he had drawn the Xenos in to kill them earlier, now the orcs were doing the same, inviting the Space Marines along the path of least resistance, straight into annihilation. He had not brought the Imperial Fists this far to be caught in the jaws of an alien trap. He wasn't going to be outflanked and blasted to oblivion within striking distance of the palace walls. The beast was attempting to hit the Space Marines from both sides and from above. Thane thought on the jumping bikes, the rotor-bladed junkers, the orcs flooding the wasteland from the subterranean tunnels running out from the palace. There was something else. The enemy had further doom to visit upon the Imperial Fists.
"Fifth Company, hold!"
Thane roared across the vox.
"Gortez, halt your advance!"
It was too late. The first of the captain's bikers had been storming towards the palace walls, intent on reconnoitring the fortifications before the arrival of the chapter. Several Imperial Fists bikes and their riders rocketed up into the air in an explosion of grit and flame.
"Bright skies!"
Thane swore, the Eidolican oath rising unbidden to his lips. The mines had not even been particularly well hidden, as Gortez had confirmed moments later. Spiked like fat sea urchins, they had been buried in shallow earth, waiting for an enemy to wander into the field. Perhaps they had been put in place after the initial attacks on the palace. Perhaps entire precincts were booby-trapped. Thane had no way to know if the entire palace was surrounded by minefields. But he did not have time to test such a theory. He needed to get his Imperial Fists inside to do the job they had come to Ulinor to do. Slay the beast. As artillery landed indiscriminately across the plain, emerging orcs were thrown into the air in blossoming balls of flame. They seemed not to care how many of their own they lost, as long as their fire found space marines. A shell dropped among Captain Uzziah's fourth company, blasting four space marines to bloody pieces and knocking the rest of the company to the ground in a storm of shrapnel.
Zolt! Thane called angrily. Get me Captain Dakarion, now!
Yes, Chapter Master.
Thane pointed up at the Storm Talon gunships hovering noisily above the companies with their missile launchers armed. Rotating his armoured finger around and then jabbing it at the orc aircraft, the Chapter Master watched the gunships leave their companies and peel off to meet the approaching junkers in the air. They were overtaken by Thunderhawks painted in midnight black. Hellstrike missiles streaked away from the wings of the Deathwatch gunships, blasting apart orc bike formations and gun buggies. Heavy bolter fire from the Thunderhawks' flanks tore up the smouldering wasteland, ripping through heavily armoured warriors emerging from hatches in the ground. As the gunships circled the battlefield, rearguard squads of Deathwatch space marines ran up behind the Imperial Fists formations.
"We have your back, brothers,"
a Fenrisian voice barked across the vox, a voice Thane recognised as belonging to Kiavik Stormcrow, whose Deathwatch squad had been instrumental in securing two of the Orc Psykers for use in the attack.
"Land raiders," Thane voxed, "you are authorised to offer suppression fire. Companies Oberon and Valdenor to support. Captain Storn, your Devastators front and centre. All other companies, keep up the pace."
"The phalanx for you, Chapter Master,"
Epistolary Zolt told him. "Dakarion, are you on station?" Thane demanded.
"My lord, we've had some complications,"
Captain Dakarion confessed. Over the channel, Thane could hear the sound of combat shotguns.
"The phalanx has been boarded?" Thane asked,
his voice edged with concern. He saw the helms of other Imperial Fists turn at the prospect.
"Status, Captain." "The phalanx has sustained damage, Chapter Master," Dakarion told him, "but it is still operational. The orcs are throwing everything at us. Literally, they're using their star forts and gun platforms to make suicide runs at the Fortress Monastery as they orbit. While our turrets and cannons kept boarding capsules and ramming ships at bay, we were struck by an orbital shipyard and the alien craft being assembled within. As we became tangled in the scaffolding, orcs from the vessel flooded the perimeter decks."
"Captain," Thane said, "the Imperial Fists need the phalanx. We need her lances for an orbital strike. We need her bombardment cannons to break the palace open.
Do whatever you must, but we need the phalanx back on station, and we need it now." "Understood, my lord,"
Captain Dakarion voxed back. Above the advancing Imperial Fists, the gunships strafed left and right, their assault cannons blazing. Enemy aircraft, laden with fat ordnance, banked this way and that, their own blasting weaponry raining empty shells down on the desolation below. Cutting through the light armour of the flyers with their forward guns, the Space Marine gunships finished the craft with precision marksmanship. Rockets tore away from the Storm Talons as they expertly flew through serrated rotor blades and heavy gunfire. Several aircraft detonated, a larger fireball following almost immediately afterwards as their ordnance exploded also. Others peeled off, streaming black smoke from their workings and compartments before plummeting into the ground to create flaming craters. As the chapter advanced towards Gorkagrod, Thane knew that they were running out of room to manoeuvre. With orc artillery dropping from the sky and the minefields before them, it would only be a matter of time before the orc forces moved up behind to cut them off from the rest of the advancing Death Watch under Watch Commander Warfist and the surviving portions of Attack Group Thusa. Looking up, Thane saw the sky briefly lit up by a flare in the pinprick darkness of the void.
"Zolt!"
the Chapter Master called.
"Reports confirm it to be the Lex Immaculata fleet carrier,"
the Epistolary told him moments later.
"A hit upon her engine column at point-blank range."
Thane thought about the swarming havoc of the space battle raging above their heads. With vessels all but smashing into one another in the confines of orbit, he doubted whether much of the gunnery was anything other than point-blank. A wild round ricocheted off his pauldron from a mob of armoured orcs throwing their monstrous forms at the chapter flanks. Imperial Fists from the 3rd and 7th Companies had climbed up onto the land raiders to offer a bolt storm in support of the tank's flamestorm cannons. As the rolling land raiders presented a curtain of fiery doom to the attacking orcs, turning towering monsters into thrashing infernos of skin-melting agony, the riding space marines fired through the flames and into the creatures beyond. A chance artillery impact turned two of the land raiders into infernos of their own, blasting the fiery wrecks from the ground to land on their roofs and sides. Imperial fists ran in to assist their brothers, but both the crews and the space marines firing from the roofs were beyond help.
"Fifth Company, withdraw!"
Thane commanded as Captain Storn's Devastator squads ran up through the ranks of the Imperial fists. As Gortez and his men rode back to the chapter, Storn's space marines took position in their stead with their heavy weapons. As buggies and greenskins on war bikes rode at the Imperial fists, the Ninth Company opened fire. Missiles streaked off into buggies, blasting them apart. Heavy plasma guns sent orbs of superheated gas straight through the engine columns of vehicles, causing them to roll to a steaming stop, while heavy bolters carved furrows across the orcs, tearing their ragged bodies from seats and saddles. Las cannons cut surging war bikes in half, while those that did make it through the storm of destruction were turned into a smeared fusion of flesh and metal by the blast of multi-melters. Tycor ran at his chapter master, the standard-bearer hitting Thane's Terminator plate with a powered force of his own suit. Thane was knocked back as a piece of orc artillery hit the Imperial fist's front ranks. High Chaplain Baccarath stumbled on his pistons and hydraulics. The bodies of Sisters of Silence were flung into the air in their slender bronze plate and flaming cloaks. The orc psykers went wild, tearing at their chains and the remaining sisters. Chief Apothecary Delgado ran in, his bone-white plate smeared with soot. A second shell, following the first on its random trajectory, came down, blasting Delgado back off his feet. Several First Company veterans had parts of their Terminator plate sheared from their bodies, while Berengard's second, Sergeant Eckhart, became an armoured silhouette writhing in flame. Brother Alvarez, the Second Company's apothecary, ran over to check on Delgado, but the chief apothecary was dead, his body a shattered mess. For a moment, a terrible dread crept into Thane's heart. That he had doomed them all with such a bold strategy, this strike straight to the heart of the Greenskin Empire, that the Imperial fists would be lost again.
"Zolt!" Thane roared. "Call it in to Captain Dakarion. Lance strikes. Full spread. I want a path clear to the target, and then I want every piece of ordnance, every warhead on board the Phalanx, dropped on the outer wall of the palace. Do you hear me?"
"Affirmative, Chapter Master,"
the epistolary said, staggering away from the remains of a land raider that an orc bombard had just turned into a flaming wreck.
"We have reached the edge of a minefield, Chapter Master,"
Captain Storn reported as his heavy weapon space marines jogged to a halt.
"All stop and close in,"
Thane ordered, prompting their perimeter of land raiders to crunch to a standstill. Track to track, the tanks put a wall of armour between their brothers on foot and the orcs pouring from dusty hatches situated in the desolation around the minefield.
"Brother Stormcrow," Thane called across the vox. "How can the Deathwatch aid you, Chapter Master?"
Garvik Stormcrow called back.
"The mighty phalanx will pound the palace, but the fortifications are triple shielded in places. Our Thunderhawks report large generator structures further along the palace wall perimeter,"
the Fenrisian reported.
"Leave it to us."
Thane looked behind him as Deathwatch squads peeled off across the smouldering wasteland, protected by black Thunderhawks making strafing runs along their position. About the Imperial Fists' formations, hulking orcs in heavy armour advanced behind shields the size of bulkheads. Behind, more greenskins, drunk on battle and the prospect of tearing space marines apart, sprayed the land raiders with a stream of slugs from their outlandish guns. Crude rockets spiraled through the night air, sometimes wheeling off into the sky and sometimes juddering the tanks with their armour-cracking impact.
"Captain Uzziah, split the fourth by squads to support the third and seventh on the land raiders,"
Thane commanded.
"Captain Iscarion, have your assault marines cut down anything that gets through our perimeter."
Behind him, Thane could hear Gortez and Brondel's companies fiercely ensuring that the chapter wasn't cut from the rest of Attack Group Thusa. Land raiders nearby suddenly rocked as muscle-bound orcs slammed into them with their shoulders, while the tank's flamestorm cannons turned huge swathes of the foe to ash and charred bone. The orcs' numbers were such that many inevitably got through. Captain Valdenor and his imperial fists blasted heads and horned helms from shoulders as the orcs tried to break the perimeter. Space marines from the 4th Company, running up to join Valdenor on the land raiders, hammered those that got through on their approach, with Chaplain Ishkarian's assault squads carving up what was left with a sweep and thrash of chain blades. Another wild shell landed on the right flank, bouncing several tanks on their tracks. Circled by angry bikes and buggies, the Imperial fists were holding their own against the hulking orcs pouring from the subterranean hatches. Blocked from advancing by the minefield, the Sons of Dawn simply had to suffer the destruction raining down on them from the palace artillery. With battle brothers blasted apart and land raiders turning into storms of shrapnel and flame, Thane peered down the flank of the palace wall. Deathwatch Thunderhawks were being blown out of the sky by orc macro cannons. Those gunships that did manage to fire off their las cannons and bombardment cannons sent blasts into the giga generators powering the palace's overlapping fields.
Phalanx!
Thane yelled into his vox as the perimeter fields began to collapse.
I need that!
And everything turned to blinding light. Imperial fists in their armored suits became scorched silhouettes, and orcs melted away in the stunning blaze. As Thane's eyes and auto-senses adapted, he saw lance beams searing down from the sky and striking the palace wall. Somehow, Dakarian had managed to hold off the boarding orcs and get the fortress monastery back on station above the Palace of the Beast. The world rocked beneath the chapter master's boots. In blasting a breach into the fortified rock and armor plating of the unshielded palace wall, the phalanx's lances had superheated the ground of the perimeter. The field of mines before the wall was detonating in a chain reaction, shattering the wall's foundations and causing sections of it to topple. Vanguard Imperial fists attempted to retreat, but were blasted off their feet by the force of the rippling detonations. Space marines in Centurion suits were knocked down, while land raiders closest to the minefield were rolled onto their backs by the blasts. Charging orcs were turned to ash on the wind. One moment, they were ferocious alien predators, behemoths of fang and muscle. The next, they were gone, scoured from existence. Those monsters not caught in the apocalyptic blaze were blasted aside by the shockwave of the lance strikes. They crashed into the sides of the land raiders with bone-shattering force. Space marine bikes were knocked over, land speeders spun and bobbed in the air, and imperial fists slid from the roofs of tanks, knocked off by the backwash of heat. Thane felt the quake of explosions beneath his armored boots. The chapter master steadied Tycor, who was desperately trying to put out flames that were swirling about the battle standard. The air about them was thick with smoke. Space marines emerged from cover like soot-caked revenants. Thane was about to issue an order when another apocalyptic boom erupted about the Imperial fists. This time, it emanated from below the ground. Something had detonated in the tunnels beneath them, those same tunnels the armored orcs had emerged from to flank their attackers. The palace and surrounding precincts were so bewildering in their architecture and monstrous in function that the rippling explosions could have originated from anything. Subterranean Promethean depots, ammunition dumps, or even the trapped gases of an overloaded waste system. But it made no difference either way. With nowhere for the power of the explosion to go, it ripped up through the ground, spouting streams of flame. Thane felt the ground give way beneath him, and then he was falling amongst tons of rubble, everything ablaze with a blinding light of venting flame, deafened by the ear-splitting rumble of the world breaking up about him. Finally, there was stillness, dust, and darkness. Thane lay there for a moment, blinking himself back to his senses. His leg hurt. One of his optic helm displays was alerting him to 100 different problems, while the other was dead. Hooking the thumbs of his power fists under the great piece of rock laying across him, Thane heaved the boulder off him. With an effort, he got himself to his feet, not easy in Terminator plate. A pauldron of his suit had been stove in by falling rock. His helm was cracked, including a shattered lens, and the hydraulics of his leg sparked with damage. As he limped about, he found himself surrounded by ghosts in the dust and haze. Suit lamps picked out groups of Imperial fists heaving stone and vehicle parts off the trapped bodies of their brothers. As his honour guard located and surrounded him, the chapter master saw Captain Berengard and members of the First Company digging High Chaplain Bakaroth out of the rubble. Lady Brisanas and her Sisters of Silence were struggling with one rabid orcsiker attempting to make an escape. The second was dead, having been crushed beneath huge pieces of shattered masonry. Soot-stained apothecaries moved among the Battle Brothers, rendering succour to the wounded and removing the gene seed from the dead. Thane crunched through the collapse, helping to right Terminators and Centurions whose thick armour had allowed them to survive the fall. Through the thick dust and darkness, the Chapter Master saw Tycho helping a Battle Brother up a rubble incline, heading towards him. In his gauntlet, he clutched the standard, the banner hanging miserably from its broken crossbar. As the two Space Marines got closer, he recognised the second as Epistolary Zolt. Thane shook grit from his plate as the dust settled. He stood in a rock-strewn depression. It looked as if a section of the Outer Palace grounds and sub-level foundations had collapsed under the force of the underground explosion. Thane and his Battle Brothers, picking themselves up out of the rubble, found themselves in what remained of a tunnel that ran beneath the palace. Shattered rock and smashed vehicles sat like small islands in a river of filth that had burst its banks. The surface of the fetid liquid had crusted over with dust and the heat of the firestorm that had swirled down the tunnel, but the waters were rising where the rubble had created a dam. He heard his Battle Brothers calling to each other and their captains across the vox. Whereas much of what remained of the First and Second Company were down in the pit with him, along with Brisanas' shattered sisters, the one remaining Orcsiker and Chaplain Iskarian's assault squads, Storn's Devastators, were above them, gathering about the lip of the crater with Uzziah and Valdenor's men. Thane stood on the shoreline of a tide of rising filth. They were in some kind of primitive sewer, a network of rough-hewn tunnels that made use of existing cave systems and caverns that ran under the core palace and central precincts. Looking up through the shattered foundations of the palace walls, he could see the thick armour plating, bolted to the exterior, still glowing with the heat. Both the wall and floor of the precinct had suffered from the chain reaction of the lance strike, detonating mines and subterranean explosion. Blackened and blistering stone cracked and crumbled as acrid smoke billowed from the fortifications. Thane marvelled that the palace fortress had sustained so little damage as a result of the lance strike. While it was huge, the stronghold looked like a nightmare of armour plating, jagged accretions and rough masonry, not unlike the mighty space hulks the orcs used to move from system to system. And, like the hulks, Gorkhagrod was a great deal more resilient than it looked. But with a hole blasted into the subterranean tunnel network, Thane and his men now had another way in.
"Captain Berengard," Thane called.
Through the dust, the former Black Templar appeared, splashing through the stinking shallows in his Terminator plate.
"What is your assessment?" asked Thane, indicating the dark, gaping entrance before them. "These tunnels are oriented towards the palace," the First Company captain said, "radiating outwards under the precincts. This could work in our favour. We should take advantage of this good fortune."
"Zolt," Thane called, "report." "Captain Dakarian and our fleets have been reinforced, my lord," the epistolary said.
"Beaumont,"
Thane said, looking at Berengard. He gave the First Captain a slow nod.
"Our Black Templar brothers have arrived." "In orbit and aboard the phalanx," Zolt said. "Caught between the Sons of Dawn, the enemy borders have been annihilated."
It was the stroke of good fortune they had been hoping for. Reinforcement from above and an opening below.
"Inform the commanders at the landing site," Thane said, "that we have created a breach. I am ordering all attack group guard regiments, Skitari legions, automata, any fighting man, woman or construct, into the palace. Once unloaded, have the Titans of Legio Intrafex secure both the landing site and the route to the palace. They are to exterminate enemy reinforcements from surrounding precincts and supply convoys bound for the palace hub."
"Chapter Master, they report Gargant formations closing in from the southern precincts," Zolt said.
"Then they're going to have to deal with them as well," Thane answered. "Navy bomber wings to support.
Yes, Chapter Master.
Thane looked up through the clearing fug at the Imperial fists, righting themselves in the rubble and gathering above on the crater lip. He could see Captain Storn, Valdenor, Uzziah, and Gortez looking down at him.
Whether we survive this dreadful day or not, the beast must die, the Chapter Master told them. By our fire from the sky, or the cold steel of our blades, the beast must die. Brothers, we must be as one mission, one chapter, one empire, the Imperium of Mankind. Second company to lead, advance with centurions and armor. The attack group will need an entry point, something we can hold and advance from. Brothers, let us be the adamantium fist that punches straight through these walls behind which our craven enemy hides. Let us drag him into the light and destroy him for all the galaxy to see. We shall take the low road, brothers, and rise up like vengeance from beneath. This beast thinks he is safe behind his walls and shielding. We shall show him how wrong he is. Our mighty guns shall pound this fortress from above, while the sons of dawn shall shake its very foundations with their fury. Beasts rise, and they shall fall, but the Imperium of Mankind is forever.